We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Ready, down, put.
This is the Bear Report Podcast. With Zach Pearson, and Aaron Lenning, providing extensive coverage of the Chicago Bears.
Go Bears!
Presented by Blue Wire Pods. And now, here are your hosts, Zach Pearson and Aaron Lenning.
What's up, Bears fans? Welcome to another edition of the Bear Report Podcast. It's officially the bye week. The Chicago Bears are 3-10 after a loss to the Green Bay Packers just last week. And it was another chance for the Bears to get a last-minute win. They fall short, but they're still number two in the NFL draft as of right now. They'll obviously change it for the bye this week. But we have a lot to talk to as the Bears get into their bye week, including the development of Justin Fields, what happened in that game, and what's left this season. Before we get into all that, though, I have to remind our readers about Manscaped, the great people over at Manscaped. They've teamed up with us to give you 20% off of any purchase on your website using the code BEARREPORT. That's right, that's 20% off any purchase on their website using code BEARREPORT. Manscaped is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Their products are precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped's Performance Package is the ultimate men's hygiene bundle. Great for Christmas right now. If you're looking for a gift for anyone, maybe yourself, take advantage of this. You can join over 7 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. That's 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code BEARREPORT at manscaped.com. Let's get into the Bears talk here, and I'm going to welcome in my co-host, Aaron Lemming. And Aaron, as I said, man, it was kind of a weird game with Green Bay. The Bears pretty much dominated for three quarters. But in my eyes, and I think you'd agree with this because I saw you tweet about this a couple times, I think the Bears got way too conservative in that fourth quarter. Even second half, I'd say, even going up 19-10, it felt like they were playing and calling plays like they were up 14 or 20.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of how they've been all season, though. And that's kind of the thing where I'm like, I don't know. And again, like, I don't honestly believe that the coaching staff is like actively tanking. Now, I know a lot of people think like, you know, the entire team's in on it. That's just not the way sports work. I mean, like, they fielded a bad enough team where, frankly, they don't really need any help losing games right now because they're doing that just well enough on their own. But dude, some of those play calls in the second half, some of the decisions in the second half, like, the Bears are 3-10 right now. Like, I don't understand why. Like, if there's any, like, around midfield, anything around midfield and a fourth and, you know, shorter than 5 or 6 yards, you should be going for it every single time. Wins at this point don't matter. Like, you need to figure out what you've got in your team, what you've got on the roster. You need to figure out who you are as a coach. There's just a lot of things right now where, again, who knows, maybe they're playing, you know, playing conservatively by design. But I mean, I even tweeted it out last night again, watching that Buccaneers and New Orleans game, man, where it's just like, I hate conservative coaching. I hate it. And yes, it ended up working out for Todd Bowles, even though he punted with 7 minutes left to go in the game, down 2 scores. But it was because the other side got conservative and got weird and made some really dumb play calls at the wrong time. And that's kind of the thing where it's just like, I don't know, man. I'll never understand conservative play calling. And I don't understand it with the Bears right now. I don't understand it in the context of the game where Justin Fields was dealing, man. Like, Justin Fields looked really damn good. Like, you take out those two interceptions, and even before, like, Justin Fields, that was probably the best passing game that he's had this year, and arguably the best passing game that he's had, you know, through the first 2 years of his career. I mean, Justin Fields looked really good, and what do? They come out in the second half, and they start getting conservative, and anytime they get conservative, they throw off his rhythm, and before you know it, all of a sudden, the Bears go from having a lead to being down, you know, at least one score, and then all of a sudden, they're in passing mode, and it's just, I don't know, man. Like, to me, it was a perfect storm for him to throw 30, 35 times. You know, the offensive line was holding up well. He got hit twice. He didn't get sacked once. He got hit twice. He was looking really good. I mean, he had a few minor misfires, but I think overall, I mean, when you look at just his overall average, you know, average yards per completion, I mean, he was over 10, man. Like, he was throwing the ball really well, but again, they shelled up and they were like that one drive, man, that one drive. I think it was in the third quarter where it was first and goal from the 9 yard line. And then the Tevin Jenkins penalty happened, even though that was a run too. The Tevin Jenkins penalty happens. It's a first and goal from the 19 yard line. And your first two play calls out of that are run plays. Like, what in the hell is going on? You finally, like, I can understand it. If you had Trevor Siemian, okay. But you had Justin Fields back there at quarterback, who's been a magician all year, and you decide to run the ball twice on first and second down from first and goal from the 19-yard line. Like, there are just so many different areas where it's almost like Luke Getsy is calling plays off of a script the entire game, and regardless of what the situation is, he's just going to call what he's going to call. And that's the kind of stuff where, again, like, I've been impressed with what this coaching staff has done. But those are the kind of things where I look at it and I say, you know, I don't know, man. Like, those are the things that give me pause going into next year, because let's just say the Bears are a lot better off. Let's just say they are in a lot, you know, they've been in closer games. Let's say they win some of those closer games. Coaching could be the difference between them contending for a playoff spot next year and finishing with 6, 7, maybe 8 wins and missing out on the playoffs. And that's where I'm starting to get a little concerned, is the in-game coaching is just not really adding up to me.
I think that was the perfect example of it was this week. And it's odd. Like you said, dude, I don't think they're really going out there and trying to tank on purpose, the coaches or anything like that. It just, that doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't happen in the NFL in my eyes. But they were just calling plays like they were protecting, you know, a 3-score lead. And realistically, it was 16-10. And like you said, the penalty set them back. They run, and then they don't even really have a play into the end zone if you look at that play. And then they settle for the field goal. Okay, it's 19-10. There's still a lot of time left in that game. And it just kind of felt like they got just way too conservative for what was happening. You know, you talked about this was probably Justin Fields' best game outside of those interceptions. And I'll get to the interceptions, but everything we've wanted to see Justin Fields do over the past couple of weeks in the season, he did. His best throws were from the pocket. He stayed in the pocket and made some really, really good throws. Like, if you watch the one that EQ St. Brown dust Jaire Alexander at the line of scrimmage and beats him. But then Alexander catches up to him. Fields puts it in the perfect spot. He doesn't throw it short. He doesn't overthrow it. He puts it in the perfect spot where EQ can get it. Same with N'Keal Harry. That was kind of one where Fields had to roll out. But he found Harry, hit him deep, and it's a big play. I thought, even on the drive where Chase Claypool fumbled and got hurt, his best throws right there were from the pocket. And it was impressive to see. Now, the interceptions, I think the first one, that's a timing throw. That's a timing route. Fields called it a dig route. And St. Brown just, you know, you have to be there. You have to come out your break better. I think running that route, he'd even say, like, yeah, that wasn't the best route I could have ran. And Alexander is a really good corner. He's going to read that, and that's going to be picked off if your receiver doesn't run a clean route. Your receiver doesn't even have to run a perfect route, just a clean route, and it's fine. But, you know, it happens. The second one, I think, is on Fields. It's double coverage. It's kind of across a sideline throw. It's not a high percentage throw that you're going to have there. You know, maybe take the check down. That's where I'd want to see him improve. And one more thing I want to talk about with Fields in this, and I know this is a lot of controversy, and I understand, you know, beat reporters have different opinions on this. The fans seem to be on one side. I totally totally agree with that. These games really don't matter in terms of the wins and losses aside from your draft position. I do think there's a little bit of value in winning some of these games. And it doesn't alarm me just yet. Because if Justin Fields is doing this next year where he's supposed to have better talent, I'd be concerned. I just, like, when I look at the 10 drives they've had this year in 8 games where they've had the chance to come down and take the lead and they haven't been able to do it. They're like 0 for 10 on those drives. Not all that's on Justin Fields, because I do think Justin Fields has thrown, you know, the ball to Darnell Mooney was right there. You got to catch that in the end zone. The Amir Smith-Marset fumble, that can't happen. David Montgomery fumble, that can't happen. You know, a couple drops here. A bad play where Cole Kmet's wide open and he runs into the defender. Things are going to happen. I just like to see one or two of those. And I don't think that has any correlation in learning how to win. It'd be nice as a fan, someone who covers a team, if they could get one or two of those. But I'm totally fine with where they're at right now. I do think they're not helping Justin Fields as much as they can with the talent they surround him. And we've just seen that. We're starting to see that. He's not throwing to a lot of guys that are wide receiver ones, wide receiver twos, and, you know, some cases wide receiver threes. You have to surround talent. If he's doing that when he has a lot of the talent, I think that'd be a problem. I don't think that's going to happen.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
And I don't either. I think that there are certain situations where Fields has to be better. And I think obviously his growth as a passer is going to be something to definitely watch for over these next 4 weeks. But it comes down to, again, man, like, you know, everybody, it's one of those things where everybody wants to put the blame for each loss on one single player, one single play, one single happening, really. And really what it comes down to for me is the fact that, and we've seen it a lot these last few weeks. And, you know, I'm sure I'm not the only one that's kind of in the spot where I'm honestly more enthralled and, you know, interested in watching some of these bottom teams play just to see. I mean, for example, like the Rams and the Broncos both lost their games when they had leads in the final minute of the game, right? And it's like, and I think the thing that I'm noticing, and we've seen it with the Bears all year too, is that bad teams find ways to lose games. And it's not any one person's fault. It's not any one play that makes a decision for the most part. It just is what it is. And I think that we saw that once again, right? Where it started off again. I mean, we talked about it where the Bears were up 16-10, had a chance to really, I don't know if I'd say put the game away because it was too early at that point, but they had a chance to go up two solid scores and they settled for a field goal. And again, the same exact thing going back down the field a few drives later, when they were in a third and short situation, and once again they go conservative and they end up kicking the field goal and Cairo Santos misses it. So it's like that's the kind of stuff that happens there. And then again, I mean, we've seen it all year where, you know, you get in that final drive of the game, the offensive line doesn't hold up. Justin Fields has been wishy-washy at times, but I think more than anything, it's like look at EQ St. Brown, man. There's two different times when he hasn't made a play late in games, whether it was the dig route that I'm sorry, man, that was a terrible, terrible route. Like, can watch that route. Awful. It's so lazy. It's ridiculously lazy. And that's the problem with EQ, man, is like, he makes these plays and you have moments where you're like, okay, he's a really good blocker. He's an okay route runner. You know, he seems to, you know, make most of the catches. But then he has these moments in games where it was like the one, it was a few weeks back. I can remember the throw, but I'm drawing a blank on what game it was where Fields had him. I think it was on a 4th and 10. And I mean, he scrambled out, made a perfect throw to EQ.
Was that the Lions game?
It might have been the Lions.
Lions or Dolphins?
I think it was the Lions game.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know either way, but he had EQ St. Brown right there. I made a perfect throw to him and the ball goes right through his hands. And then again, it's like with this lazy, lazy route. If you watch it, it's like, I don't know, man, I won't lie. Like it really bothers me that Jaire Alexander you know, ran his mouth after the game. That dude got burned twice by two mediocre receivers. I mean, he got burned by EQ St. Brown. And he got burned by just absolutely owned by N'Keal Harry. And then he has the audacity to talk a big game after, you know, making that interception, basically saying, well, I knew he was slow and I knew exactly what that route was going to be. And it's like, I don't know, man. Like, I watch these games. And again, I'm not saying that Justin Fields doesn't share some of the blame for some of these losses down the stretch. Like, is there more that he could have done? Probably. And, you know, again, not really in this game in particular, but just in some of these games. But it's like, but you look at everything around him and it's like, if it's not one thing failing him, it's another. If it's not the play calling failing him, it's the offensive line. If it's not the offensive line, it's the receivers. You know, like, there's always something that, again, it comes back to, like you just pointed out, a lack of talent around him. And it's like, the offensive line was good all day. The play calling was extremely questionable in the second half. And then obviously there were a few plays that weren't made. And let's be honest, I mean, that last interception he threw in garbage time, he forced the ball. It is what it is. It is what it is. That's kind of where, like, yes, he does share some of the blame. That was a bad throw. That's a throw that he should have made. But with that being said, when you look at the entirety of the game and the fact that he once again had a crazy 55-yard run for a touchdown, I mean, that thing came out of nowhere. You look at how good he was in the pocket. I mean, there were multiple throws in this game, in this past game against the Packers, where if this would have been earlier in the season, like some of those plays where he stepped up into the pocket and actually delivered a nice pass, he would have taken off running. He would have taken off running, probably got 4 or 5 yards, taken a big hit. It wouldn't have been anything right home about. But the fact is we're finally starting to see development from him as a passer. We're starting to see development from him. We know he's smart. I mean, this dude is extremely smart. We've known this for a while, but we're finally starting to see the mental progression of his game start to happen. And it's unfortunate because when you look at the box score, you're going to see, you know, 250 some odd yards, 80% completion percentage, no touchdowns and 2 interceptions and the rushing touchdown. But in all reality, he played a really good game as a quarterback, not just as a runner, but as an overall quarterback. And I don't know, man, I said it, you know, I said it on Twitter after the game, and I still feel this way. Like, I've seen more than enough from Justin Fields to know that he is the guy moving forward. Now, I'm not guaranteeing that he's going to be a top three or even a top five quarterback, but I do think that he's shown enough that he's going to be a good quarterback. And I think that the ceiling is still so high because of the things that he needs to work on. And I wouldn't say they're easy things, but they're things that can absolutely develop. Where, I mean, would you be shocked if he makes that year three jump that we've seen Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts, and Tua make? I honestly wouldn't. I almost expect it at this point. That's where I'm at.
Yeah, I'm with you too. I think it's going to happen. And I really like, you know, what I've seen from Justin Fields, especially this week. Like, this is what we've wanted to see from him. Yeah, he had the 2 interceptions. I get it. Like, I feel like it's Packers fans making way more of a big deal about the 2 interceptions than anyone else. Like, even the national media is not even making it the big deal about the interceptions. And they've been some of the biggest, you know, ones who've criticized Justin Fields. It's like, you look on Twitter, it's like Packers fans, oh, the tide was turning, huh? And then he throws, no one realistically, I mean, I'm sure there are a couple Bears fans who are saying this. No one who follows the team, covers the team realistically thought if the Bears beat the Packers, it was the passing of the torch. It's not realistic. Like, the Bears have not done well against the Packers. Even if they beat them, it would have been a 1-1 split. There's no passing the torch. We don't know what's happening with Aaron Rodgers. Do I think the Bears are probably set up in the long term better than Green Bay? Of course I do. But yeah, the interceptions were just, it was just mind boggling going on Twitter and just seeing like how many Packers fans tried to spin that win into something special. And man, nothing against them, but like, honestly, right now, what situation would you want to be in this year? Would you want to be a team that has 3 wins and picking number 2 right now? Or would you rather be a team that has 5 wins, still needs to win every game essentially the rest of the year and have other teams lose because of tiebreakers to get into the playoffs? And even if you do, you're going to be facing probably a Minnesota team or, you know, someone like Dallas or whoever else eventually, where you're going to lose. Like, the Packers are going to be picking between 13 and 17 essentially in that scenario. So I don't know. It's just, like you said, man, I think he's done enough. I think he's progressed. A lot of people have been calling for him to throw out of the pocket. And he finally did that. And then this is something else for people to complain about, I guess. But yeah, overall, I mean, I think it was a pretty good day for Justin Fields. However, man, you know, look at the defense, and there's a couple ways we can kind of break this down. I look at this defensive performance, and I think Alan Williams did a hell of a job. He was dealt a pretty shitty hand this week with all the injuries. They're down four starters in that secondary, and they trotted out Josh Blackwell, Jalen Jones, Elijah Hicks, DHC. Those are guys where it's one veteran and three rookies, two of them undrafted, out there as the starters, and they play really damn well. Say what you want about the end, you know, I don't think Aaron Rodgers beat them through the air at all. I just think the team lost containment on Christian Watson, and then, you know, Agent Dillon had a nice run there at the end. But Alan Williams had a good game plan. The problem is they're not getting any pressure whatsoever. They didn't hit Aaron Rodgers once. They didn't sack him once. And to me, that's a difference in your game right there. You get pressure on Aaron Rodgers, it doesn't have to come down to Justin Fields going down and winning you a game.
Yeah, I agree. I think, yeah, and that was actually, I think you tweeted something out. It may have been from the Bear Report account. Basically, you know, kind of talking about what you just did with Alan Williams and the defense, and how well, I think a lot of people tend to forget, man, that this defense, yes, this defense has been terrible, but I mean, what did people expect? Like, you look at the defensive line right now, they don't have, in my opinion, they don't have one long-term starter on that defensive line. They've got a bunch of depth pieces, and, you know, half of the guys that are on this team right now are probably never going to play substantial snaps again in the NFL unless they go to another rebuilding team after this year. Like, that's just where they're at. Then you look at their linebacking core. Nicholas Morrow's okay. Jack Sanborn is proving to be a quality. He's never going to be the best player in the defense. He's probably never going to be an all-pro, but he can be a quality player, you know. But he's an undrafted rookie making his fifth start. And then you look at the secondary, and they were missing four out of their five week one starters. Jalen Johnson was the only guy out on the field that was a week one starter for them, right? Obviously, Eddie Jackson was gone. Jaquan Brisker was gone. Kyler Gordon was gone. And, the same thing with Kendall Vildor. And frankly, man, they play really damn well. And that's kind of the thing. Like you just said, like, if you can't get pressure on the quarterback, not much is going to happen. And this is still a younger secondary looking, you know, they're still learning. They're still learning a brand new offense. They're still growing in the league. And really what this comes down to, again, man, is that the front seven as a whole has just not been nowhere near good enough. And it's not going to be until they can get into the offseason, and hopefully they can, you know, as of right now, I mean, they're sitting at the number two overall pick. We'll see how that all plays out. But they're probably going to be, barring something really crazy like them winning two or more games, there's a very good chance that even if they went into the game, they're still going to be picking top five, which means there's going to be a top-end defender. And if they pick top three, I mean, there's a pretty good chance that Will Anderson is, you know, going to be there sitting at number three for them, you know? So it's one of those situations where, like, it just is what it is, right? We know what they're working with. I think from a coaching standpoint, I think if you're comparing the two coordinators, obviously I think that Luke Getsy is the superior coordinator, but I think that even with as crazy as it sounds, like, Luke Getsy still has more to work with. Luke Getsy has an ascending quarterback, you know, like, he's able to scheme around certain things defensively. There's only so much you can do. But with that being said, I mean, for the most part, especially for the first three quarters of the game, the Bears defense played pretty dang well, especially considering they didn't have a single hit on Aaron Rodgers the entire game. They had a bunch of undrafted rookies back in the secondary, or late round picks back in the secondary, and they look pretty good. So, you know, it's kind of one of those things, like I said before, I can't muster up enough energy to be remotely upset with anything that Alan Williams has done so far, because let's just be honest, man, like, this defense has very, very little talent on it. Like, there are not very many long-term starters on this defense, and it's just going to take some time to really figure out where things are at. But with that being said, I think that, you know, seeing how these younger corners and these younger defensive backs played, I think should inspire some confidence. Not so much that, you know, any of these guys can become long-term plus starters, but the fact is that even if some of these guys develop into fringe starters and depth pieces, that's still something that you need down the line. You're going to need cheap control outside of going out and drafting, you know, guys and signing, you know, bigger name free agents. Like, you're still going to need this kind of thing. So, I mean, again, like, I understand people are upset because they lost to the Packers, and the fact that they did have the lead for a while, I get all that. I mean, trust me, it wasn't a great feeling game by any means. But I do think that there was a decent amount of positives, especially for it being week 13 of the NFL regular season, where you've won three games. And quite frankly, I mean, it's just things just kind of seem to be spiraling in a hurry, which is expected for a rebuilding team. But I think this is about the best of what you can expect moving forward with this team, especially, you know, with some of the quality opponents that they play. I mean, their next four games, they have the hardest strength of schedule left in the NFL, and they're very, very, very likely going to end up finishing with the hardest strength of schedule in the league overall. So, I mean, it's just kind of something to keep in mind at this point, that it's just, it is what it is. And you frankly, you're just looking for pieces of development and bright spots moving forward. And I think we got some of that on Sunday.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
That's the thing, man. It's evaluation season right now. Coming out this bye, you know, like you said, they have some tough, tough games. I mean, they have, what, three of their four right now are against playoff teams, and the Lions are kind of creeping up that wild card. The Lions have looked pretty damn good. They've already beaten you once this season. It's evaluation season, man. It's you're going to look at some of these guys and say, hey, can I build my roster with some of these guys? And like you pointed out, man, I don't think on the defensive line they really have anyone. I think Travis Gibson will be here as a depth piece. I think you can keep, you know, Justin Jones, the guy that can be here as a veteran presence, but they need a dominating three technique on that line. They need a game wrecker. They need a Kenny Clark. They need, you know, someone that could just get in the backfield and wreck games. Maybe in the secondary, you might have a piece. I thought Josh Blackwell and Jalen Jones played really well. I know Jones got flagged for that long pass interference. It just didn't make sense to me. We got to stop rewarding quarterbacks for underthrows. I know you have to get your head around, but to me, the biggest thing on that play, and I don't like complaining about the refs, the judge on the other side of the field threw the damn flag. There was a guy standing right there watching them, did not throw the flag. So to me, that's just, yeah. But yeah, I mean, Elijah Hicks is a guy you can scout here. You know, you're going to roll with Jaquan Brisker. You're probably going to roll with Eddie Jackson next year, but can Elijah Hicks be that third safety that can come in and give you some valuable reps when needed? It's interesting to see what's going to happen. And then, you know, kind of flipping over the offense, my biggest one and one of my biggest takeaways, Alex Leatherwood. He had 10 snaps. He was really damn good though on those 10 snaps. And you watch that play, I think it was the EQ long catch. He stonewalls the edge rusher there. And that was one of his very first snaps of the game. So yeah, he played well. And for a guy who had mono, I mean, he flat out told us after the game, I was in that media scrum, he lost 25 pounds. And it took him a while to get that 25 pounds back. Not only that, the fatigue absolutely just burns you. Like, you're not your normal self after mono. I had mono. Granted, I'm not an athlete. It took me a while to recover from that. And as an athlete, it took him a little bit to recover. So he's a guy I'm definitely watching. I think the offensive line is going to be really interesting next year. I think you're going to go in, you're going to have Tevin Jenkins. You're going to have probably Alex Leatherwood's probably going to be battling for a spot. And then Braxton Jones. And outside of that, I don't know what they're going to do with their line because they need some pieces. And right now they have veterans and Sam Mustipher out there playing. So this is all about evaluations. These final four games, how do these guys stack up against premier talent? You're going to see a really good offense and a really good defense against Buffalo. You're going to see the same thing against the Philadelphia Eagles. You're going to see a Lions team that's very talented, and you're going to see a Vikings team who is number two seed right now in the NFC with a lot of talent. So for me, it's just about evaluations. Who's going to be here next year?
Yeah, and I agree. I think it's an interesting conversation when you talk about this offensive line right now, because Braxton Jones has definitely been up and down. I think as the season has progressed, he's become more consistent. And then obviously we'll have to see. Alex Leatherwood only played the 10 snaps. I feel like in some ways, and I know obviously having mono and everything else is definitely not not something that helped him at all, but I feel like in some ways the Bears have kind of dropped the ball a little bit on getting him out on the field. I understand Riley Reiff is a veteran, and he brings a steadying presence, I guess you could say. But frankly, man, Riley Reiff really hasn't been good enough this year. Kind of like not like Jason Peters last year, where Jason Peters was pretty dang good most of the year, right? Like it hasn't been the same thing. Riley Reiff hasn't been bad per se, but he hasn't been good enough to where you're going to want to sit there and say, yeah, we don't want to replace, we don't want to replace him halfway through the year. But, it's going to be interesting to see. If it were me personally, what you have in Larry Borum, that Riley Reiff isn't going to be here next year. So if it were me, I'd be starting Alex Leatherwood at right tackle these next four games, because unfortunately, I don't think that you're going to be able to see enough over these next four games to be able to say, okay, this is our starting right tackle moving into next season. But I do think, if you see enough from him, the plan can be, okay, we're going to go out and either sign or draft a right tackle or a left tackle, and then we're going to let Braxton Jones and Alex Leatherwood and I guess maybe Larry Borum, although we've seen Borum two seasons in a row now, and he just seems like a swing tackle to me. And maybe you get enough from Alex Leatherwood over these next four games where you can confidently say, like, this guy can compete for a starting job next year, right? And who knows, maybe they're just throwing him where they feel like they can use him for the time being. And then when next year rolls around, maybe they'll slide him inside. I don't know that there's a path over these next four games. I think it's too small an evaluation of a sample size to be able to say, okay, these next four games, he plays great. We're going to slot him in at a starting spot next year. But I do think that he can do enough to where maybe you can look at Braxton Jones and him and say, okay, we're going to have a competition at one of the two tackle spots with these guys and figure it out. And I know one guy's playing right and one guy's playing left right now, but a full off season worth of work, especially with a guy like Leatherwood who's played all over the place, maybe that's something that they think about. And I think those are the kind of key developments that you want, because even if, let's just say, Leatherwood doesn't end up panning out, even if he doesn't end up panning out as a starter, it's still quality and cheap depth to have over the next few years. I mean, when was the last time the Bears really had quality depth on the offensive line, dude? It's been a long time. It's been a long time since that's even been a conversation. And again, it's not all about, when you're talking about development, you're talking about trying to figure out the roster, it's not all about figuring out who the starters are and everybody else is worthless. Like, that's just not the case, because some guys take longer to develop. And having cheap, controllable depth is also something that's big, is a big key for teams. I mean, we saw that with the Bears back in 2018, where they still had Bryce Callahan on rookie, a rookie deal. They still had Adrian Amos on a rookie deal. They even had Nick Witkowski on a rookie deal that was depth for them. The depth, Jonathan Bullard at one point was the same way. Bilal Nichols was the same way at one point. There are multiple names of guys that weren't true starters that were depth that could moonline as starters when they needed to, that really helped them through that type of season. And I think that's kind of what you're looking for, as well as maybe some of these, some of these guys locking them in the starters, like, let's say, Jack Sanborn, for example. But yeah, I think that over these next four games, I mean, that's really all you can look for, right? I mean, coming out of the bye, I mean, they've got, man, that's going to be tough, man. They got the Eagles, and then they got the Bills. I mean, you got two teams with a combined four losses between them. It's just, man, that's a tough ask. But we'll just have to see what happens. I think, again, the biggest thing moving into the season and what has, shown out so far this season is the fact that Justin Fields is a guy, man. I think that if anything you can take away from that, the fact that they've got, 100 million plus in space and they're going to have high draft picks in each round, I think you got to feel pretty good moving in the offseason, really regardless what goes on in these next four games. But I think the mindset of anything else that happens in these next four games is just kind of a cherry on top.
I'm with you, man. And it's going to be a fun offseason to cover. There's a lot of storylines, a lot of interesting things we're going to have to pay attention to moving forward. And yeah, it's kind of just nice having the bye week, but I'm kind of ready to get into the full offseason mode. So, Aaron, where can everyone follow you on Twitter at, and where can everyone read your work?
Yep, you can find me at Aaron Lemming NFL on Twitter, and you can read my work at thebearreport.com.
Awesome. You can follow The Bear Report on Twitter at Just Bear Report. You can follow me on Twitter at Zach, Z-A-C-K underscore Pearson. As always, please rate, review, subscribe on all major podcasting platforms. Check out Manscaped, code Bear Report for 20% off your purchase. Great for holiday gifts right now. Until next time, everyone, please stay safe.